You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Ann Thompson. She's an artist and a curator, and we're going to be talking about both curatorial and artistic projects. She's in Missouri right now. Ann, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Brainerd.
So I want to talk about the I-70 sign show and those billboards, but I also want to put it in the context of you as an artist and also as a curator, so it's clear to the listeners you're an artist that's curating as well as a curator that's making art. And
sure.
So to begin with that Missouri show, and then go back, I know you moved there from New York, so what was happening in New York, and can you talk about your artistic practice then and what led to, the Missouri move and this work?
Sure. I was living in New York and making abstract paintings, mostly working as a painter, and around that time, my husband and I got this kind of great opportunity where he and I were both recruited to come to the University of Missouri for both of us to teach. And so after a lot of consideration, I think I was either really pregnant or I had just had our daughter, we decided to come to Missouri. And the context of that surprised me because I trained as a painter. Before I was a painter, I was a reporter. That's a longer story, but I was trained as a painter and had this idea that I have this painting practice, it's in my studio, and that the artist's studio is this sanctified space where you make your work and nothing really penetrates that, and that's what you do. And I just assumed that that would be transportable. And when we got to Missouri, I was really surprised by how much my surroundings affected my art practice. I was really not kind of able in the same way to make paintings or work in the studio the way I had been working in New York, surrounded by museums, other artists who were working the same way, and the city. And sort of over time, my practice changed, but I also became really interested in engaging.
Well, wait a minute. I want to talk about that for a second because I also had a practice on a small island. It was Block Island. It was 7 by 3 miles.
Oh,
and
right.
I was an artist working out there. And I can tell you out there, it was very different making work than when I moved to New York after that. And I want to just explore that a little more as you're saying how it changed your practice. So you went from a studio in New York to a studio in Missouri. I mean, intuitively it would seem like it would get better, right? You got a bigger studio, it's cheaper,
Right.
But tell me a little bit more about what was changing when there weren't museums and all that stuff around.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad you're going down this road with the questioning. Yeah, that was interesting because we moved here and I did suddenly have a bigger space, but first of all, the space wasn't how you imagine your space. I think everyone's fantasy is, oh, I'm going to move to some small town or go out into some space and there's going to be the kind of big industrial factory type studio space that we think of in New York. And that just was not happening here. At first I had a studio in this office above like an accountant's office or something. You know what I mean? It was really sort of hard to find a studio space. And once I did, I was preparing for a show in New York. I had something to work on. It was going to be my second show at that gallery. And I had had this show of abstract paintings there right before we left for Missouri and was like, great, I'll keep doing that. And it just kind of didn't make sense. I couldn't really do it. And so what I wound up doing was when we moved here, thinking, okay, what am I going to do? And I reverted back, well, not reverted back, but sort of dipped into materials I had been saving and found a psychological study equating color and colors with words that I had found at Yale when I was a student in grad school. And I started playing around with that, almost like a way to create my own context. I didn't have the outside sort of New York art world as my context for making work. So I thought, well, I'll create this own context for myself in order to know what to make in this kind of odd environment that I don't necessarily understand yet. So I created a color word system called the Color Word Value Index. And so in my own studio here in Missouri for the past, 7 or 8 years, I've been making an ongoing body of work based on
this study that associates colors with words, and then I've added other elements like breaking them down into categories, positive, negative, and neutral, numbers.
Is your studio still, I'm sorry to interrupt, but is your studio still where it was in these last 7 to 8 years on top of the accountant's office?
No, it's moved around, and actually my studio is still in an office, but in a different location, but as a result of doing the billboard project here, this year right now I have a fellowship at the Reynolds Journalism Institute, which is an entity within the Missouri School of Journalism, which sort of interestingly is where I got a journalism degree like 25 years ago. And so I have this fellowship at this institute, and I have an office there, and I've turned that office into my studio. So it's basically my studio has moved from different sort of office spaces back into our house and then back into different kinds of spaces. So I've had maybe 4 different studios since we've moved here. It hasn't been that easy.
And where have you been exhibiting work? Like, how does your practice get out then, since you're in Missouri, which is the other difference between being way outside of the city, right? You're not going to openings and everything has to be...
Yes, really, really different. Well, as I said, when we moved here, I was showing at a small gallery, and I had that relationship when we moved here, and then I had a second show, and the dealer closed into, like so many other galleries, she closed the gallery in 2009 after the economic, meltdown. So since then, I've just had sort of small shows and haven't really been exhibiting my work at all. And the kind of lack of that connection with the wider art world was part of what was one of the motivating factors in starting the I-70 Sign Show, because that was a way to, A, connect in a real way with my environment, like what's here, a ton of billboards, how can I activate that landscape, but then also work with artists who I already knew and really loved their work, and also get to meet and work with artists who I really admire. And so that's been how I've been functioning for the past couple of years. And then as a result of a connection I made through that, I'm actually going to have a show in New York next summer. And it's the first show I've had in the city since 2008.
I mean, so that's interesting. And I'm glad you shared that, because that's also part of what it means to move to Missouri, right? For an artist that was just functioning in this different way. And I think that's a very interesting, transition then to talk about I-70, because it was still sort of you're living in this, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but as I'm reading it, you're living in this place that's kind of far away from everything, and to get attention both kind of metaphorically and figuratively, you've created a curatorial practice where you're enlisting all these billboards throughout.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, the town I live.
I mean, The reason I mentioned that, it seems a natural outgrowth, right? Yeah. Or correct me if I'm wrong, of your artistic practice, because you couldn't get the attention out there and the shows and everything else, or you may eventually, or will have some, but that the becoming a curator and having that project is a way of extending your art, so it has to be seen, in a sense.
Yeah.
Even though it's not directly your art.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's not my art. I mean, it is my idea, and that I find just as interesting. That's something that I do find just as interesting. And it is a little bit of the equivalent of the thing that I know actually you've talked about in the way you've mentored people, because I know that you do that, and I know some of the people you have mentored, the idea that, okay, you want to engage with the art world. One way to do that is to curate a show, right? Or write about the art world. And curating a show here, I kind of thought, well, okay, I could curate a show in my house and follow that model, or I could curate a show in a small space, but that didn't really seem as interesting to me as kind of what was really going on here in the wider landscape in Missouri. I'm in the center of the state in Columbia, Missouri, at the town where the University of Missouri is. I'm in no way in a cultureless place. Like, I'm in this great college town surrounded by lots of interesting people, incredibly smart people. But what really kind of horrified me and also fascinated me were the number of billboards that are on the interstate between St. Louis and Kansas City. And I'm right in the middle. I'm like 2 hours away, right in the middle of the state. St. Louis is 2 hours west of me, and Kansas City is 2 hours yeah, no, opposite. St. Louis is 2 hours east of me. Kansas City is 2 hours to the west. And that's how long you have to go to get to what you would consider like an art museum. And so Missouri has a billboard surplus. They're 5 times more than the average of any other state. And when you get on, when you drive across from Illinois into Missouri, you suddenly just start seeing tons and tons of billboards, and they're big. And a lot of them are blank because there are so many of them. So there are blank ones, and then there are ones that advertise your usual, like, Cracker Barrel and, you know, banal roadside things. But then there's this other thing going on where space is so affordable that you have interest groups putting up idea messages, political idea messages. Like, there are lots of things about anti-abortion, pro-life billboards, billboards about guns, billboards about, you know, questioning the Obama administration. Like, it's very right-wing. But you see lots and lots of these messages, but they're mixed in this odd kind of culture war conversation, because there are lots of messages for porn, right? Because it's a truck driver route, so it's like, don't abort your baby, but come to our XXX bookstore. Like, it's a really strange,
right,
strange mix of stuff. And what I thought was, I had been thinking, well, somebody should do a billboard project here. And then I thought, well, I'm going to do it, because I got to do it before somebody else does. And at first I thought, oh, I'll do my own billboard, because, right, I have this project that deals with language, the color word value index. I'll put, you know, text on a billboard. And then I thought, no, it would be more interesting to reach out to some other artists and figure out a way to have the artwork engage this political conversation. And so that's basically what the I-70 Sign Show does. I rent a billboard in the middle of the state, and the project has been funded by the University of Missouri. So a shout out to them. I'm really grateful for their support. So I rent this one billboard and invite artists to contribute work that engages, I would say, red state, blue state issue themes along the interstate. And that could be like beauty, gender, consumption, labor laws, gun laws, all kinds of things. And the billboard or the artwork goes up on this one billboard for 2 months. And then the billboard company gives me this second billboard for free, just because there's so many extra ones. And so each artwork then rotates to a different location elsewhere along the interstate. And I don't pick that second location. So the artwork starts out on this billboard that's in the middle of a cornfield. It's at the edge of a family farm. It's very, very rural. The billboards that surround it, one's for a strip club. The other one's kind of changed a lot, but there's always this strip club billboard, Club Vogue, and then my billboard. So, for example, McLean Thomas was a fantastic artist who we worked with, and we put up this billboard with pictures of these two very sort of stern and elegant-looking African-American women with this background of pattern, gorgeous. And in that context, next to this, or sort of right behind this strip club billboard, it immediately speaks to issues of the male gaze and the body and, right? But then her billboard moved, and it moved really close to St. Louis, and this was right in the middle of Ferguson. And that was really amazing, because then suddenly that image became a really powerful contribution to a conversation going on about race politics. So what's been great is this context of the interstate, in a little bit the way we were just talking about, like, okay, you have the context of the studio, or you have the context of the city, right? You're working in this context and what surrounds you, and that affects what you do. In the same way, the art that gets put on the billboards, the meaning of that and how it functions is impacted in a really site-specific way by what surrounds it. So when the sign moves, it gets this new context, and it has a different kind of meaning or a more enriched meaning. And that's happened every single time with every artwork and every artist I've worked with. When it moves, the meaning always gets like more kind of intense because of the surroundings.
Right. That's so interesting, that context. So going back to just when it was kind of launched, maybe talk about like the very first project, but also the funding of that. You said the university has funded this now in a way that's really cool, because it's also, this is something that other, in a way, teachers can do, because universities, you know, depending on, not even big universities, can fund projects that relate to the teacher's research, if that's the context that it was in. And it sounds like this project also wasn't that much money to actually create because of where those billboards were, right? Or correct
yeah.
me if I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. It's been really affordable, and that's been one of the great things about it, that I've been able to do so much with kind of not that much money. It hasn't really cost that much money. But the university support, that's been interesting because I'm an adjunct. I teach part-time. I teach one class. I teach an art class for the journalism school here because I have this dual background. I started out as a journalist and then became an artist. And so my husband is a tenured professor, and so you're talking about the teaching context. He has all kinds of access to grants and all kinds of things through the university, and I don't so much. But when I thought about funding the project, I immediately thought, I'll go to like Walmart or something. I'll get some big corporation to help me pay for it. And in those exploratory conversations, not with Walmart, I never talked to them, so I don't want to put that out there that I have, but like local banks, the response was, oh, well, are you going to put our logo on the billboard? Which was like, well, no, that just meets the purpose. And it was really hard to get businesses to understand the idea of, you know, cultural capital. Like, you do this project, and then that affects your business because you're engaged in this great public art thing. They wanted that immediate, like, we want our logo on it. So I went to the journalism school, the dean of the journalism school, who's an amazing fundraiser, or has been, just to be like, how do you think I should fund this? Give me some ideas. And he's the one who said, well, why don't we fund it? And so the university kind of offered this money to me, and I was able to get it because on the side, but as part of the project, I worked with a small team of undergraduate students who are essentially, in university terms, are doing undergraduate research, like research that's part of my research, for student credit, and therefore the university is able to support that financially because it's part of its goals in terms of how it works with students. So that's how I was able to fund it. It wasn't, you know, this straight ahead road like I applied for a grant and got it. It's been a very kind of ongoing thing where, okay, we'll do it for 6 months. Oh, it's going great. Let's do it for another 6 months. And then after a year, I was awarded this fellowship at the Reynolds Journalism Institute, and now that institute is funding the project into next year, so that the billboard.
And the project isn't a huge budget, right? I mean, is there a staff,
no,
or is it just you?
No, it's me. It's me. It's me and my husband, who also started out as a painter when we moved here and is now a digital media artist. Like, both our practices changed. He helps me with. He designs our website, right? Like, he helps me. So it's a very, like, it's a really kind of, like, bare bones thing. So the project is me. I don't have a staff. I have 5 students who help with small logistics, but that's it. And as a sideline to the I-70 Sign Show, if you go to the I-70 Sign Show website, there's a section called Billboard Database, because for the past, I guess now, 18 months since I started it, I've been photographing all of the physical billboards between St. Louis and Kansas City. I think there's something like 600 of them. I've photographed maybe 450. And to photograph the actual physical billboards, right, not the art ones, but the, you know, the ones that are always there. And the messages change. I just photograph each one and the message that happens to be up when I photograph it. But all of those are on the database so that when someone who doesn't live here and doesn't understand what it means to put Mel Bochner in this context can go and look at all the different billboards and say, you know, oh my gosh, that's wild that art is entering this kind of dialogue. You can see what all of the billboards are.
Well, and it's, you know, it also, as an artist curator, it also, you know, to kind of bring this whole thing around, entered into the realm of artists as, you know, curators in suburban areas, right? Is this suburban
yeah.
where you are, or is that, yeah?
It's a small, like I said, it's a small university town, and we live technically, like, not a town, it's a city. We live, like, in the city, so it's not what you would think of as, like, you know, Beaver Cleaver suburbia, not like that. There's the city, and then there's some areas that I guess would be more, you know, suburban, but then you immediately get into farmland. It goes really quickly from the college, the city where the college is or the university is, to farmland. And so that's kind of, it's a mix of And politically, Missouri, I think a lot of people might know this, but politically, Missouri is a really conservative place. I mean, if you think about, you know, the red-blue map, that, like, famous map, like, if you look at Missouri, it's just, like, solid red, and then there's this, like, bright spot of blue that's St. Louis, this bright spot of blue that is Columbia, where I live, and then another one that is Kansas City, and everything else around it is deeply conservative, and a part of that is evangelical Christianity, farmlands, and rural situation. So it's not really what you would think of, like, suburban Chicago. That's not what this is.
Right. That's, I mean, yeah, something else with all that land. And how did you, you know, begin to pick the artists? I mean, your artists seem to right away be, you know, some major names, right?
How did I get them to do it, or how am I picking there?
Both. How did you get them to do it, and how did you pick them? You know, because they do seem to be such big names. It seems like Creative Time would be doing something like this in New York, you know.
Right. Well, I really worked my network. I went to Yale. I got an MFA there in 2002. And the first person that I asked was Mel Bochner, because he was my teacher and I worked really closely with him. And I had reviewed his work in the past. And so I wrote to him because he, you know, is perfect. And so I reached out to him to suggest that he might want to contribute one of his pieces that said blah, 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 right? A famous thing that he does, because it's so great in this context where you've got this message onslaught. You're just, you know, deluged with messages as you drive down the interstate. So when he said yes, I was so, you know, grateful that he did. So he was the first person I asked, and he agreed to do it. And then one of my classmates was Nicolene Thomas, was somebody I went to grad school with and is a friend. And so I asked her, thinking this work, you know, I didn't ask them just because they're well-known. That helped the project, but it was really like, their work is going to suit the goals of the project as I foresee it, which is to have the artwork engage this existing conversation. And so Nicolene's work, oh yes, of course, this is a great way we can talk about gender, right? And then once I had Mel and Nicolene sort of agreeing to do it, I was able to reach out to Kay Rosen, and who I don't know at all, and say, I'm doing this project, here are two artists who are doing it. I would love to include you. I admire your work, and I would really love to use your piece, Blurred, which is the word blurred, and the first three letters, BLU, are in the color blue, and R is purple, and then RED, the word red, is in the color red, right? So here in this piece, you have this immediate signal image of the landscape condition along Interstate 70, of this sort of blue-red, you know, conversation in the state and the, you know, blurry message onslaught. So she agreed and was really excited. So I launched the project with Kay, and then it just went on from there. So I've worked with Ken Lum, Ryan McGinnis, Carl.
And Ken Lum and Ryan McGinnis, they weren't part of your network from Yale, were they?
No. No, not at all. I didn't know them at all. And honestly, like, no one I've asked has said no. It's been great. The artists have been so generous and so engaged in the idea that it's been terrific to work with everyone. And I've been really not amazed. I mean, like, I think I have a good idea, but it's been really kind of great for me to understand how interesting this context is to other people, because it's really interesting to me, and to then be able to talk with and work with other artists about the context and get them involved in it and engaged in it has been one of the great satisfactions of doing this.
Right. That is great. I love the idea. So in closing, what is the future of, or how do you see the immediate future of that project, and also of your evolving practice as they come together or separately, however you want to talk about it, but what's coming in the near future there? How do you see it?
Yeah, well, as a fellow at the Reynolds Journalism Institute, one of the things I'm doing in addition to the Billboard project is thinking about how art can enter other, let's call them, mass media analog areas, right? Because billboard's a dying medium. Suddenly you put art on it and it has this kind of resonance that that digital media, for example, doesn't have, right? You're online and algorithms and your own, you know, choices of what you, quote, like are dictating the information you see. You never see anything online that doesn't, you know, agree with your tastes and values. Whereas if you drive down the interstate and look at these billboards, you're suddenly seeing a bunch of stuff that might offend you. You think it's ugly. You don't like it in terms of its message. Like, I don't like most of the stuff, but I have to see it so I know about it. And that was interesting. So one of the things I'm exploring is the idea of curating art into newspaper, right? Thinking of the newspaper as something akin to the Missouri interstate, where you have this environment of ideas, marketplace of opinion and idea and information mixed together. What if you put a poster insert or gave readers an artwork that existed in that context? And we're going to workshop that actually here in Missouri with one of the local newspapers. We're going to print a poster version of the current billboard, which is by Jeff Gibson, which is an image that has guns and fruit and flowers on it. It's an amazing, beautiful image. So a poster version of that will be in the local newspaper as a way of experimenting with what other kinds of kind of journalistic communication space can become exhibition space for art so that the art functions as commentary. So that's one way that the Billboard Project is going to continue, you know, maybe into other formats. And with my own practice, I'll be having this show in the summer showing work attached to this color word system I've been working on for quite a long time. And so it'll be great to have that all come together in that context.
That's great. And I'm looking forward to seeing what that'll be. Is there anything you want to leave the listeners with? People are hearing, you know, your story from different parts of the world, as well as the United States, and some may be curators as well as artists who think, Jesus, that's cool, you know, I'd like to do that and or something like that. You can even leave with saying something like that or just pointing to, addressing that kind of crowd that probably has that kind of a, you know, an interest in what you're doing or just what you think they should look to next. There will be links to your projects in this interview.
Oh, yeah, sure. I guess the... not really advice, but the thing that I found really great about doing this project is, again, coming out of this idea of, like, you want to enter the art world, you're starting out your art career, or you want to, you know, redirect your art career, becoming an artist who curates is a way to do that, and a lot of people do it, but every situation isn't the same. And so, again, instead of thinking, oh, I'm going to curate in a gallery, right, the idea of looking out and thinking, well, what makes my wider environment different? What's different about what's going on around me? And thinking in that way, like getting really, really local about my thinking, right? Thinking like, what's really happening here? What's happening here is we're in this kind of strange political situation where you have a lot of opposing views and we have this interstate with a lot of billboards on it. How can I engage that and in some way kind of like claim the whole state as art territory, which seems really ambitious, but it really was a deeply local idea. And so that was surprising to me to think like the more local I got with my thinking and the deeper I got into my living condition or the situation where I am as an artist, the more kind of wider my world got, if that makes sense, right? It sounds like some kind of like Deepak Chopra, like.
I know it sounds like that, but it does make sense on a geographic level. And we're talking about impact, right? It makes sense, right? Suddenly it's becoming very large is what you're saying, the impact.
Yes, that's right. The impact became very large. So that was one of the great kind of lessons for me was to, okay, yes, think about what you can do, but there are so many other ways to function that don't involve creating a show in a room, right? So that would be that's kind of the way that I think that this has translatable applications in terms of people who live any place in the world thinking about, like, well, what's really going on in my situation and how can I activate that in a way that brings new ideas to the wider conversation.
Anne, thanks so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure and I think inspiring to many people as well as myself. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you, Brainerd, for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.